you know what? You want to become a good American? You want to become a citizen? Well, you need to act like us. We don't drink.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV. Today we're talking with Garrett Peck, author of the new book, The Prohibition Hangover, Alcohol in America from Demon Rum to Cult Cabernet. Garrett, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Nick, for having me.
What is the Prohibition Hangover?
The idea behind the Prohibition Hangover is to look at what happened to Americans and alcohol after repeal. No one at all had written any kind of study about what happened with their drinking habits over these last 76 years. And so it really took a good look at how the country went from one where we changed the Constitution not once but twice to deal with alcohol. And so there was a heavy stigma against drinking. And now here we are 76 years later where two-thirds of us drink. So in the course of just those three or four generations, there was this huge shift in American society.
Before Prohibition, what was the percentage of Americans who drank?
It's kind of hard to say. Okay. Certainly drinking was actually on the decline before Prohibition,
right.
In part because of the century-long temperance movement.
Right.
It actually really peaked in the 1820s.
Mm-hmm.
That's where probably the all-time peak of American drinking actually took place.
And what was that peak? Do you know, like, how many gallons of whiskey per child did we drink?
It was about considered to be 3 to 4 times what we actually drink today per capita. Significant.
And so then, we go along, drinking is declining, Prohibition wipes it out officially. What was the percentage of people who kept drinking during Prohibition?
We don't actually know because there were no statistics that were held on during that time. What we do know, of course, were deaths from cirrhosis of the liver, which actually plummeted.
Right.
So in that sense, Prohibition worked in one account.
Right. But then it had, you know, any number of negative side effects, right?
Correct, such as law-breaking,
wholesale
disobedience to the law of the land and the Constitution,
you
know, and so on.
After Prohibition, how long did it take for drinking to become normalized again?
I'd say it really took probably until the 1950s, and by that point, the leaders in the temperance movement who had pushed Prohibition on the country had largely died off. The generation that fought World War II was a drinking generation. They were born and raised largely during Prohibition, and as they came of age, they decided, you know what, this isn't our cause. We're going off to war. We're going to drink. And so by the time, you know, we get
but
to
they drank
men,
they drank watered-down beer, right?
They did. That was part of the soldier's ration back then, 3-2 beer.
Which then emanated out into certain states had 3-2 beer laws, right, where younger people could drink that and then you could get real stuff later. So the Prohibition, I mean, part of the book and one of the things that's fascinating is the way that Prohibition was repealed, but then it kind of, its skeleton still exists over the way liquor is regulated in America and then also some of our cultural attitudes. Could you talk about how does it still affect the legal framework of laws around the country, and then some of the cultural effects of Prohibition?
Okay. From the legal framework, the big hangover we got was the regulatory framework, which was the three-tier system. 32 states and the District of Columbia adopted the three-tier system. They're called licensed jurisdictions. And then 18 states and Montgomery County, Maryland, became controlled jurisdictions. Those states in particular, and I live in one of those, which is Virginia, if you want to buy distilled spirits, you have to buy it from the state itself, even though you don't buy gas or groceries or jeans from the state, but you buy distilled spirits from the state. So that's part of it. There was just such a sense of the stuff is wrong, it's sinful, we want the state to control it.
How much of it is also that we want to capture all of the proceeds and the tax revenue?
That certainly was part of it. And I'd say today that's entirely the case. Alcohol is not a sin anymore in American society, other than a few places in the Deep South.
So, and then what about the cultural hangover? How does our experience with Prohibition continue to inform our fears or anxieties or our embrace of alcohol?
Yeah. The stigma against alcohol lasted for decades. And in a lot of cases, it continues still to exist in a lot of places, especially the Deep South, I'd say. Especially areas where you have a lot of evangelical Protestants who still preach the evils of alcohol. So in that sense, we have never, ever quite gotten over over alcohol or
where
over
does
prohibition.
Where does the vilification of alcohol come from in a Christian context? Because, you know, certainly there's wine in the Bible. Jesus, maybe he didn't drink wine, but he certainly produced a lot of wine.
He did drink wine.
And obviously Catholics, Jews, many Protestant groups didn't have problems with beer or wine or anything like that. What is that connection that certain religious people draw with it.
It came about during the early part of the temperance movement in the 1820s, 1830s, and these people were so adamantly in favor of abstinence that they believed that, therefore, because they were teetotalers, therefore Jesus had to become one as well. And so they reinterpreted the Bible and said wherever it says wine, it was actually unfermented wine, even though there was no scientific basis for that whatsoever. Right. Or any cultural basis within Judaism. Mm-hmm. But they had an ideology, and therefore that became a litmus test for them.
And then what? Why did that argument carry over so widely into an American culture that was teeming with Europeans who did not have the same approach, Latin Americans, Asians, or whatever?
Mm-hmm. The temperance movement kind of came head-to-head with this huge wave of Catholic immigrants who brought their drinking habits with them. I mean, Catholicism has never had a theological issue with alcohol, never. And the white Anglo-Saxon American Protestants who were running the country at the time saw these new people coming in and saying, you know what, you want to become a good American, you want to become a citizen, well, you need to act like us. Right. We don't drink. So in a lot of ways, this became an attempt for them to impose their cultural values on these newcomers into the country.
That's fascinating. Talk about, in the book, you traveled widely, you traveled around the country. Talk a little bit about your travels, and talk about the most interesting place that you saw.
I traveled quite a bit. I'm actually from California, so I went all around. I grew up in Sacramento, so we went to the wine country a lot as a kid and as an adult. Probably the most fascinating trip I took was the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. And the chapter on distilled spirits is actually my favorite chapter because it's the one I learned the most about. I went into this knowing the least amount about bourbon, and now I'm a big bourbon fan. Just it's such a pretty part of the country, and how they make bourbon and the aging process is really fascinating.
So is bourbon your poison of choice?
For distilled spirits, yes. But I love beer, and I collect wine, so I drink pretty much everything except for cheap rail vodka.
Is this a golden age for booze hounds in America?
I'd say so, yeah. Especially as there's an increased awareness of how we drink. Certainly there's a big awareness of drinking and driving, and much more people are in tune with, okay, if I have to work tomorrow, I can't like have five or six drinks tonight, but so if I get to have one or two, make them really good drinks, right? So there's kind of awareness of that. There's the whole foodie culture that's going on. So even despite the recession, people still go to farmers markets, and they want to buy fresh ingredients, and they want to try and how they can include those things in their drinks as well. So, yeah, there's kind of a cultural phenomenon going on where people are more and more addicted to quality.
I want to thank Garrett Peck, the author of The Prohibition Hangover, for talking to Reason TV. I'm Nick Gillespie.